So as we continue our transformation throughout the day, we're going to start to pivot a little bit from some of the foundational things we have heard about today so far, the policy changes, some of the building blocks, and we're going to get more into a little bit of the applied aspects of how all of these things are being put to use. And one of the themes you'll see throughout the day as we look at Safe Drinking Water Act, what it does and what it doesn't do so well, no fault of it's just the framework it operates in, is some of these divides between private wells and public supplies and regulated contaminants and unregulated contaminants, and how does the Safe Drinking Water Act and all of the associated regulations, where are the gaps in coverage, you know, where do we have some good synergies? And one of those areas is with the focus of our next speaker, Mindy Erickson, who is from the USGS. I'll try not to shift your affiliation here. And Mindy will talk a little bit about private wells and what are some of the challenges that private wells face in both terms of quality, quantity, regulatory coverage, all of those things that they exist kind of on the periphery of the Safe Drinking Water Act, but not fully covered by them. So Mindy will kind of help explore that. Hopefully I didn't completely butcher your the theme of your talk, right? So.
All right, and first to start with a big thank you to everyone who came before me. I think all of you set up a great segue into the primary topic of this talk in talking about the framework that's out there for safe drinking water for public supply, a little bit of inroad into the private well situation, and the regulatory framework, and so I really appreciate that great setup. So the goal for all of us as professionals for the regulatory framework that we have set up is safe drinking water. And I think in this, the circumstance we have for the public supply, we are doing a really great job. For public systems, there is a very well-defined framework for testing and a lot of support and requirements for treatment if there are contaminants that are found that are above the thresholds that have been established for drinking water for public supply. We also heard about the societal support that we have for the infrastructure for public supply in the form of low or no interest loans, grants, et cetera. And so all of these investments and all of this framework that's set out for public supply is actually, by and large, missing when we talk about private drinking water. There is virtually no enforceable thresholds for drinking water quality, and there's only a patchwork of suggestions, guidance that's out there for testing of private wells and for support of at-the-tap drinking water treatment systems. And the regulatory framework sets up one of the barriers or sets up one of the situations for inequity with public supply versus private supply. The other just comes from us being people, and we as people having our own perceptions and biases and kind of filling in the blanks the way that we want them to. Want them to be filled in with regard to missing information. And so there is an idea out there about what tells us whether or not our drinking water is safe. Does it taste good? Does it smell? Does it look funky? Or does our neighbor have a test result that we could rely on? And so all of these things go into people's heads in terms of giving feedback or information about whether or not the water that's coming from their private well is safe or not. And all of these perceptions are exactly that. The reality is the only thing that really gives information about the water quality from any individual well is a test result from that individual well, because there is so much variability across the landscape in terms of water quality changes from well to well, even wells that are very close together. And things like arsenic don't have a smell. They don't have something that you can see or taste. And so there can be high concentrations of contaminants in water that has the appearance of being just fine. And I think many of us would like to think that we know and we often don't know. We just fill in the blanks with information that's available. So with regard to drinking water safety at private wells, there are a lot of question marks. And so I'm going to go from here, looking at a look at what are the most common contaminants in drinking water aquifers, first at the national scale, and then come into our regional scale, and then talk about Minnesota specifically. And we'll talk about some information that we have with regard to Minnesota specifically about people's knowledge and attitudes about their private well water, and then take a little look ahead at what could be coming next in partnership with the health department and larger as a society and as a whole in support of domestic well water and safe drinking water in private wells. So nationally, the geologic source or geogenic contaminants are most commonly found in the source water for aquifers that are serving public water systems. And these next couple slides are going to be based on a study published last year looking at public source waters, not delivered water, not all kinds of wells, but specifically public wells in source water. Arsenic, manganese, radionuclides, strontium. Those are the contaminants that have the highest proportion of high concentration, with high concentration meaning exceeding an established either MCL, so a regulatory threshold, or some other health-based threshold. So arsenic, manganese, radionuclides, strontium. There are some commonalities between what we see nationally and what we see here in Minnesota. In terms of anthropogenic contaminants, they are in general less common at high concentration in these drinking source waters. Nitrate, pesticides, pharmaceuticals are present, but at a lower proportion than these geogenic contaminants. PFAS, it's a topic for another talk. In fact, the talk right after mine is going to talk about PFAS, so that's really great. And so what I'm talking about today is excluding the conversation about PFAS. So that's what it looks like nationally in terms of the statistics. What does it look like across the landscape? As you can see, across the entire United States, with the little pie charts that are there, the white is no contaminant that was found at high concentration, again, exceeding either an enforceable or human health benchmark. The pink slice is an anthropogenic contaminant that is found at high concentration, and the green slice is a geogenic contaminant found at high concentration. And you can see across the whole United States, the vast majority of drinking water aquifers used across the whole country, geologic source or geogenic contaminants make up the vast majority of the exceedances of established thresholds. In fact, 17% of these aquifers have areas or samples that had an exceedance of a geogenic contaminant threshold, whereas 5% were anthropogenic. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do this. Let me see if I can. The bubble for the glacial is this bubble here, and you can see that we fit right into the general scheme of things with regard to geogenic contaminants, anthropogenic contaminants, or no contaminants above drinking water standards at a particular in a particular aquifer. So what does that look like in terms of individual constituents and populations that are served by the aquifers with these concentrations? Across the nation, arsenic is far and away the most common regulated contaminant found at high concentration or moderate concentration is what this is showing also, which is a half of that threshold, so 5 micrograms per liter. Up to 11 million people are served with public water systems that are accessing a resource that has high or moderate concentration of arsenic. Fluoride, uranium, manganese, strontium, molybdenum, a number of different radionuclides, all are found in a high proportion of aquifers serving public water systems across the country. In contrast, again, nitrate and other anthropogenic contaminants are found less commonly, still common, but less commonly at high concentration across the nation. What does that look like on the map? When we look at the map, and this is looking at arsenic and manganese specifically, with the left map being arsenic and the right map being manganese, and here again where the glacial system here, the yellow part of the pie is high concentration and the green is moderate concentration, with the blue being low concentration. So again, arsenic, manganese, widespread at high and moderate concentration in drinking water aquifers across the country. Now, if we zoom in a little bit specifically to the glacial aquifer system, which still pretty big aquifer, coast to coast across many northern states, but does encompass Minnesota completely and serves as domestic well or private well, the private well aquifer for many of our citizens who are using that. And as we look at what it looks like here in Minnesota area, or in general across the glacial, but then also in Minnesota, trace elements, so arsenic, manganese, and other trace elements, again, are found at high concentration and a high proportion of wells that were sampled within that drinking water range, both public and private supply. And other constituents, things like pH or other aesthetic benchmarks, were found at even higher proportion of wells, with, again, the organics, nitrate, found in a smaller proportion. And in terms of individual constituents and people served, proportion of the aquifer that's affected, trace elements including manganese, arsenic, strontium, uranium, all found in relatively high proportions of the aquifer system in that drinking water depth zone across the glacial system, with other constituents following then behind. And again, thinking about maps and where do things fall in high concentration. Here in the Minnesota area, you can see, again, a highish proportion of high arsenic, very high proportion of high iron, manganese, and then nitrate and pH are in general, less found at high concentration or in the realm of pH outside of the very high or very low category. All right. And let's shift now to thinking about Minnesota and Minnesota's private wells. About 20% of our population is served by private wells as a primary drinking water supply. That is about 1.2 million people. Lanyu was talking about the proportion of that population that is here right in the Twin Cities metro area. I was actually quite shocked to see the number of private wells that are still within the Twin Cities metro area. But when you look statewide, it's even a wider spread and really the only drinking water resource that's available. So over a million people, about 20% of our population. And what do we have out there in terms of guidance for private well owners for testing? The health department recommends that private well owners test their well for what they're calling their top five contaminants, bacteria, nitrate, arsenic, lead, and manganese, at varying intervals. Some of these contaminants are also required at the time that a new well is drilled. So there's a little extra protection there for new wells that are being constructed. But aside from that new well testing, there isn't anything that's required. It's up to the homeowner to know, hey, I might have a problem, I should find out, and then to find out how to get that water tested. Get that water tested. If a test result comes back, now what do I do? So it really, the onus is on the homeowner to do that testing and to educate themselves about not only what to test for, but how to do that, and then what treatment might be out there. So in thinking about these particular contaminants, how common are they? Manganese, in a fairly recent study, was found at in about 50% of samples above the threshold that's set for infants, which is 100 micrograms per liter. So that is for infants drinking water and infants formula preparation. Arsenic, about 12% of newly constructed wells have an arsenic concentration that exceeds the drinking water standard established for public supply. In more than 25 counties, over 20% of those samples exceed the drinking water standard. And in some counties in western Minnesota and elsewhere, 50% of samples exceed the drinking water standard. Bacteria, oldest study looking, said about 27% of wells have bacteria that could cause the gastrointestinal illness. And nitrate in new wells, not as common. In older wells, and especially in areas that have vulnerability, as we just heard about from the Atlas talk, and have agricultural activity, 4 to 5% of wells have nitrate that exceeds the drinking water standard established for public water systems that's protective of infants. And lead? Lead is a big unknown. And so let's start there. Lead, we know, is a widespread hazard, but we don't really know what the occurrence of high concentration in drinking water is. The public water systems have an action level of 15 micrograms per liter, with lead causing nervous system problems, especially in kids. And domestic wells often haven't been part of the conversation in talking about lead. We've talked about pipes to homes from city service and, you know, those sorts of lead potential sources. Don't hear very much about lead and domestic wells. The fact is, though, that domestic wells are also at risk for lead, from lead that is in the infrastructure all the way from the well construction to the plumbing that's in the home, especially in older homes. So lead should be part of our conversation in terms of drinking water and private wells also. Even though it's not an aquifer contaminant, it's still a drinking water contaminant. Manganese, and this map is from the first white paper that the MGWA did back in 2015. This map is from there and illustrates the widespread occurrence of high manganese in groundwater in Minnesota. Again, the standard for infants is 100 micrograms per liter, with the 300 standard for everyone else. And again, manganese neurological effects can come into play. And then arsenic, also a widespread geologic source contaminant in Minnesota. The drinking water standard for public water systems is 10 micrograms per liter. And almost 150,000 people are using private wells that have, or estimated to use a well that have arsenic exceeding that drinking water standard. Arsenic's a carcinogen, and it has other well-documented adverse health effects. And these effects are applicable to everyone, not just infants, not just kids, all of us. All of us are affected by arsenic in the drinking water. And then finally, nitrate, also common, primarily at high concentration because of anthropogenic sources. And the public water system, a drinking water standard is 10 milligrams per liter. Estimated about 60,000 people are using well water that has nitrate above 10 milligrams per liter. And the primary risk that is out there, and that is the regulatory framework is based on, is methemoglobinemia for infants. There are other age effects that are still being researched, but as of yet, the regulatory framework is still based on the infant risk. So what sorts of challenges do we have with regard to public water system wells versus private wells? Public water system wells have a whole lifetime of regulation, support, protection, et cetera, with regard to safe drilling, safe water quality coming from that well, and then finally sealing that well that is not being used anymore. In contrast, the private wells have construction regulations and a limited amount of testing that's required for water quality. But in terms of support for mitigation, you know, putting in a treatment system, absent. Protecting the source water, except for some setback distances and whatnot, also absent. Funding for treatment and testing on an ongoing basis, absent. But again, the same rules are out there for well sealing. Whether or not there is financial support for that, not really out there. So in terms of thinking about public versus private well water quality, private well owners are more susceptible to contaminants in their drinking water by the very nature of the regulatory framework and rules and information that are out there on a required basis. And one of the places where this comes into inequity is also in thinking about changes that happen to the regulatory framework for public water systems. So, for example, the arsenic rule change that happened in the early aughts. And from that has come measurable, demonstrable reductions in arsenic exposure to people who use public wells. And at the same time, even though the drinking water standard was reduced, messaging to private well owners was updated along with that rule, the same benefit hasn't been realized by private well owners in terms of reduction to arsenic exposure. And finally, in parts of the country, not sure about here in Minnesota, wouldn't be surprised, but don't know, practices in the past, historical disparities in access to hooking up to public water systems have been denied to some minority communities. And so this can also lead to disparities in drinking water supply and safe drinking water based on our societal factors. So in terms of what do we know about perceptions, biases, barriers to making change, and then what opportunities can we jump off of? There was a study done by the health department in the mid-teens that surveyed private well owners who were notified that they had arsenic exceeding the drinking water standard of 10 micrograms per liter. And the question was asked, did you do anything? And 34% of the owners of these new wells with high arsenic didn't do anything. And so there were some questions asked about who they were and why they made the choice they made. And so we'll walk through that just a little bit. So one of the main reasons that people took no action, even having been told that they have high arsenic in their new well, they weren't concerned about it. Not concerned about high arsenic in their well water. And a number of these people who were surveyed volunteered that the reason they weren't concerned is because either their well driller or the person who built their home or some other trusted person involved in that process gave information that made them feel like, oh, arsenic isn't a problem. It's common around here. It's really too low to be dangerous, and it's going to decrease over time. So all of these types of messages are things that we as a community can help, you know, change the perception and change the messaging to have updated information out there for these new well owners. Another primary barrier was not really sure who to contact to try and get any help to figure out what to do about that high arsenic. Feedback about treatment options being too expensive or too complicated to keep up or to use. And then finally, haven't gotten around to it yet, but I plan to, or other reasons. So this is good information to help us understand where people are coming from when they're making decisions. Even though they have information, they're making decisions that don't necessarily align with trying to have healthy, safe drinking water. So the next step was to look at different sorts of statements about the water. And these questions were things like, do you agree or disagree with the statement, my untreated well water is safe to drink? Or, I know what level of arsenic to be concerned with. Or, it's hard to compare the pros and cons of treatment. And there were certain societal factors or societal measures that went along with the likelihood that any respondent might say yes or have a strong agreement with these question or statement. And these societal measures were related to things like gender, whether or not you grew up with a well, whether you have kids living at home, and then also income, education level. And so the next step of this questionnaire that was done was to look at what kinds of things prompted people to want to test their well or to get more information about testing their well. So that's you know, taking something we know about why people didn't take any action, but what might have somebody take some action. Number one, by far, a change in taste, odor, or appearance of the well water. May or may not mean that the water is actually unsafe, but it's a great opportunity to say, hey, let's do some testing of your well water. And so that could be something that we could take advantage of. People's willingness or interest in changing if they have personal feedback that there might be an issue or a change. Another is whether a doctor makes a recommendation to test the water, or if in your home there's someone with an unexplained health problem. Groups who found this to be a compelling reason or a prompt to get tested included women and houses with kids. Another prompt was whether or not there are kids in the home at all. What's a prompt to get that water tested? Again, women, younger people, and people with a lower education level are likely, if there are kids at home, to be prompted to test their well water. If there's a local well testing event, and so who again? Women, people who didn't grow up with a well, so it doesn't feel familiar. Younger people, and again, households with kids are more likely to be prompted to test their water. And finally, hearing about a problem that a neighbor is having. So those over-the-fence conversations about water and water quality. And again, women who didn't, and people who didn't grow up with a well, also people who had more education, and people who were higher income, and again, households with kids. So in thinking about how we can be looking for ways to make connections, we can take advantage of some of this information that we've gathered about who's likely to be prompted to do a well test. Another challenge that we face is this intersection of education, income, and where we have the hazard in the drinking water supply. And so this is a busy map, and what it shows is in the blue is showing numbers of wells, the red is showing the income or the socioeconomic vulnerability, pardon me, and then the darker the colors, the more the two intersect, the number of wells and the socioeconomic vulnerability. And then overlaid on top of that is the proportion of wells that have high arsenic in a particular county. And so you can see that there are certainly parts of our state that are experiencing high proportions of arsenic contamination in well water and who are vulnerable to these measures of the socioeconomic measures. So people may not feel like they have the agency, the wherewithal, the resources to figure out what to do about their well water and then to actually pay for taking that action. And so the health department is embarking on some measures right now to promote voluntary well testing for homeowners that rely on private wells And then, in addition to that, providing some financial support for treatment if there are high levels of nitrate or arsenic. And the work is going to be focused in two areas that are focusing on the particular issue that's more common to that part of the state. So for arsenic, Horizon Public Health has been given this grant to work with soil water conservation districts and then also their own staff, the public health staff, to do well testing, again, voluntary well testing, and then provide information and support based on income for putting in treatment systems and education about treatment systems. And then in a different part of the state, there is an effort looking at nitrate. Arsenic and nitrate are often not coinciding. So if you have arsenic, unlikely to have nitrate, vice versa. Not 100%, but not a bad rule of thumb. And so the nitrate-focused pilot program is in a different part of the state. Southeastern Minnesota, which we heard about earlier, has little to no geologic protection for contaminants that come from the ground surface into drinking water. And then thinking about other next steps, and I got this information from the health department, and if I got any of it wrong, you guys can correct me. I did the best I could to take notes and try and convey what's coming. Next steps include something that they're calling a private well forum. The first of these already happened, and I was told that there was a hope that of maybe having 100 people participate. And more than 200 people participated in this first private well forum. I find that to be really positive, really buoying with the possibilities of putting together this coalition, a private well coalition, maybe something similar to what we have here with the Minnesota Groundwater Association, right? We're not a profession. We're not a state agency. We are pulled together around this resource. And so that sort of an idea, thinking about private wells, feels really possible to me. And one of the other next steps is, I've got two slides and I got confused. More grants akin to what's already been underway to continue the work with the public health community, with the soil and water conservation districts, and with others who are close to home, boots on the ground, trusted local contacts for learning about drinking water safety, testing, treatment systems. And then some other next steps are an expanded education and outreach effort. Including continuing to provide free information for continuing education for realtors. I was thinking about this yesterday. I think there are also continuing ed requirements for different sorts of professions that may be useful, things like, you know, daycare providers and those sorts of places where there might be a high interest because there are kids involved. So, I mean, that's just a thought. Working to promote and build technical capacity with the local partners, and then also to develop a private well stewards program, so peer-to-peer education and knowledge sharing, something akin to the Master Gardener program that's out there, that sort of a thing, only related to drinking water and private wells. Expanding the MIN data portal. Right now, there is great representation for arsenic that's there. There's some information about nitrate, but expanding what's out there and how it can be accessed and how it can be visualized. And then finally, doing a baseline assessment of private well owner or well user knowledge. So might be a renter who has a private well, attitudes, practices, and then to use that baseline information, again, to design testing and treatment programs, education programs, and then to circle back and do an assessment to see how effective whatever interventions happen, how effective they are. And finally, I'm going to end with, what are other states doing? There are other states that have lower drinking water standards for some contaminants than what the EPA does. For example, New Jersey and New Hampshire each have their own state MCLs for arsenic that's 5 micrograms per liter instead of the federal 10. Other states also have well testing requirements at property transfer. So that goes beyond that voluntary testing, that's where we are now, voluntary, into something that tiptoes into additional regulation and requirement. It's happening other places, things we could consider. So just a quick summary, making great progress on data availability and some of the scientific understanding related to different contaminants in our drinking water supply, and also starting to make more inroads into that private well community engagement. Working to develop effective education and outreach across a lot of different aspects of our community. And finally, financial support. We heard over and over this morning about the financial support that we as a society have put into public water systems in the forms of, you know, first, the rates that we pay, right, for our delivered water, but also low interest or no interest loans that sometimes can be forgiven, and then outright grants. Can we think about something like that in the realm of public wells or private wells as part of our societal responsibility, something for the public good? And with that, I will run through the references that are here as one of the requirements for me to be able to make this available later, but they're all here. You can go back and read some really great papers if you want to, and that's what I have, and I don't even know what time I've got. Probably out of time.
Maybe you have one question.
We can sneak in a question if anybody has one. Otherwise, please catch up with Mindy at lunch. So not seeing any. Thank you so much.
There was one. Here.
All right.
There was one, the woman in the pale sweater there.
Yep.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to your vision of a private well coalition. I happen to be a private well owner in an area where there's high arsenic, and I know some of our neighbors had their wells tested, and they have a high level of arsenic. Mm-hmm. And there are others who have deeper wells that do not have that, so they don't really have a concern. But I do. I had my well tested.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
So, yeah, I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more as to your vision of that private well coalition and what that might look like.
Yeah, so it's not my vision. It's the health department's vision. They're really leading the effort. And my co-authors who are listed on the slides, I think I didn't get them into the thing, Tani Eschenauer with the State Health Department, she's one of the people who's spearheading that, and Frieda von Quaelen. Right? And so she's also somebody who's been really instrumental in this. And so, Frieda, if you want to stand up just so people can see you, and we'll thank you. Yes, thank you for getting this going. It's really a great step in the right direction. So, passing on the message. And certainly, I want to help be part of the solution, just as I know many of you want to help be part of the solution, which is to talk about it, talk about the possibilities. But it's the health department that's really spearheading that, and I hope you do get involved, and I hope it helps our community as a whole. Great. Thanks, all.